Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Another incredibly newsworthy week in the world of professional wrestling. Particularly was the word I was really trying to get out, in AEW. And since, Les, we normally start with WWE, however, this week I feel like there's so much AEW news that I want to make sure we get to everything before we turn our attention to WWE. So we're going to start in the land of Tony Khan, and we will discuss that talent meeting at some point in this conversation. But let's start with where everybody is starting, and the look of surprise plastered across every single person in that building on Wednesday night when Jon Moxley steamrolled CM Punk.
Yay. Yeah, it was, you know what? Those guys did a hell of a job because I bought in at first. I thought, you know, that the foot had been surgically repaired, had given out. And I think it was a hell of a, I mean, the idea is it's nobody's going 60 minutes through. Punk's, as I said last week, if you just beat Moxley square in the middle, where have you left him? And of course, that won't happen at this point. And I liked it. I would have done it a little bit differently. Actually, I would have started a week earlier. So that now I know tonight on Rampage, they're going to show some backstage footage from Punk. But I would have started a week earlier. I would have gone with this, and I would have, you know, done the, you know, the film, the back, and you know, he's too early on this foot. And, you know, he can say, yeah, it's all on me. And then have some films of, you know, specialists looking at it, people, you know, whatever the hell you do to repair something like that in a short, you know, or make it stronger in a couple weeks' time, and then built to the pay-per-view and put them back together. Does that make sense?
It does to me.
Well, it's as long as it does to you, I don't know. But no, like I say, at first when he went down, I thought, and the fact that they didn't, you know, the announcers played it right, I think, and when they took him to the back, then when I'm looking on, you know, on the Observer site and other sites, and I don't see anything, I thought, okay, they worked a good angle. Because I figured then we were going to get some sort of, you know, announcement opposed, because I would have thought, you know, that I would have at least on Wednesday night put out something that, you know, you have a specialist taking a look at his foot or that, whatever, but they did nothing. And that's what the next day made me start to think, okay, they're going somewhere with this and he's maybe not hurt. And of course he wasn't hurt. Well, I don't think anyway. But yeah, I thought the angle was good, and the fact they did it in, you know, 3 minutes or less, actually, I think Vic made it better, because nobody expected that. I sure as hell didn't, and I'm sure that, you know, most of the fans didn't either.
And you get the
what
bonus.
Was your take when you saw it?
Yeah, you get the bonus of fans realizing, hey, you know, these matches aren't necessarily going to be 35 minutes. It could end at any time. You never know. So you get that in there. But I look at it, and obviously I didn't have a problem with the result. I was surprised by it. I did not expect it. But then there's all sorts of questions that have come up. In fact, way more questions than answers. I mean, you look at that, and maybe it is an angle to bring them back, if not Labor Day weekend, then some other time in the relatively near future. But there's also a couple of other options on the table. Perhaps Punk isn't recovering as fast as they'd hoped, and he really wasn't going to be ready for next weekend on pay-per-view. So they had to get it off him. They decided, and maybe that led into the decision to do it on television and get that shock value out of it in front of the biggest audience possible, and decided to go this way with the angle. It's possible, as you said, that this is just what they decided to do as an interesting story for Punk and Moxley, for that matter. Or there's the conspiracy theorist take. And you know, as a New Yorker, I love me a good conspiracy theory.
Of course you do.
That's been online in some places, at least this week, that Punk might have been punished by Tony, which I laugh at, and the VPs, which is a little more plausible for what he said about Adam Page last week, and maybe the fact that they're all allegedly angry with him for Colt Cabana's apparent banishment to Ring of Honor, which, of course, Punk has denied over the course of the last few days as well. My personal presumption is that he wasn't healthy enough to work the pay-per-view next weekend. But when I lay those options out, what makes the most sense to you?
Well, you know, I don't know. See, I don't know Tony Khan, so I can't really say out, you know. But you mentioned the punishment thing. Now, I can see Vince doing that. And I can see talent not liking it, but not saying a word to Vince. I couldn't see that same thing happening in AEW because I don't think any of these, don't get me wrong, it's not that I don't think they respect Tony Khan. I just don't think they have a problem speaking their mind to him. You know, so I would imagine if he said, well, you know, this is, I don't, maybe, you know, but you go to Punk and say, hey, we've decided here's what we're going to do, and you're going to look at the lights in 3 minutes. And he wasn't in on that, and it wasn't laid out initially at first. I think he would have had a problem, you know, because I know what I would say. You think? No, I don't think so, you know, and said, well, why is this the plan? But like I say, I think this, it makes good sense to do it this way simply because it is something that in modern history, as far as I can look, you know, over the last number of years, nothing like this has been done. Have you seen anything like it?
I have not. You know, the injury thing, you have to be a longer time fan, obviously, and in my age bracket to think about it. But I remember the Intercontinental title change between Tito Santana and Greg Valentine, where Santana went in there with a bad knee because he had been attacked by Valentine and then got attacked before the match, decided to go ahead with it and lost in probably 3 minutes or less with the figure four and the referee stopping it. And Santana legitimately needed some knee surgery. So I imagine that's why they did it at the time. But that was the first thing that popped into my head, only because I've been watching this stuff forever. But in recent times,
wasn't it Dragon that got beat in just seconds on a WrestleMania?
You're right, Sheamus at WrestleMania. That's the thing that really started the whole yes thing for Bryan Danielson. Actually, yeah, you're right.
Yes, right. And nobody expected that either, did they?
No, and this was obviously a much longer thing. It was not 3 minutes, but the way Brock Lesnar dominated John Cena at SummerSlam a few years ago, that was a long match. They tortured poor John in that match.
Yeah, that's a fact,
dude. But it was as one-sided as this match we saw Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I'm shocked that they, well, I shouldn't be saying I'm shocked, but I honestly didn't think they would pull something like this, but I like it. I think because it is so different, completely different. As I said, once I got a chance to think about it, I would have done it a little differently and extended a little time. And instead of just having the backstage thing with Punk tonight, I would have, you know, like I say, sent him to a foot specialist or what, you know, and, you know, drawn it out a little bit longer. And I think they'll do well at their pay-per-view. They did well Wednesday night, and everyone is singing the praises. But when you see what you had on Wednesday night, thank God. If you hadn't done what you did, then it would have been time to have three or four backstage meetings, I think.
Well, they had really solid numbers all night. I'm looking at the quarters here, courtesy of Brandon Thurston on Twitter. And they were above 1 million for everything, interestingly enough, except the last half hour, the main event of the show. I'll let y'all go tell that story. But the Jon Moxley Punk match got nearly 1.2 million viewers. So they did get it in front of the biggest audience they've had in a while. And they got shocked, surprised, and hopefully they all want to see what happens next.
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking about the extremely stretched out long trios main event.
I am, I could indeed have skipped it. And in fairness to them, both quarters, while the lowest on the show, were more than AEW did last week. So there's that.
Well, that's good too. But, you know, I said, it was a great circus act had this been a circus. But since it's not, I mean, and again, for those who are just catching on to Vic and I'm these guys are tremendous athletes, and I'm into high spots. It's what makes a wrestling match, you know, give it peaks and valleys. But if I want to see a circus, hey, I watched America's Got Talent, and believe me, the people that do the stunts on there smoke the wrestling people. I'm sorry, but they do. But yeah, it was kept going on and on. And then when, what's his face, Osprey got into it with, I keep looking at the kid in the white mask and thinking of what Whitey Caldwell and I did here as the Avengers years ago. we all wore all white as well, but that was just, okay, guys, thank you. There's a taste of Mexico. Now can we move back to the United States of America? No, it was, you know, if that's what you're into, I'm sure, you know, those who are love Lucha, and I'm not adverse to Lucha, but I just, that wasn't my main event. It wouldn't have been my main event.
Well, you did say something interesting to me off the air about Will Ospreay, though, because obviously he's adept at a number of different styles, and if nothing else, even though this match wasn't necessarily your cup of tea, you came away impressed with him again, am I right?
Yeah. He's developed. Well, you know, when I watched him in Ricochet, I said, okay, I've seen it once. I've seen it. Can he work? Oh, yeah. I said, well, how about I haven't seen him work? I've seen him do a lot of acrobatics. And that's actually what I saw on Wednesday, this past Wednesday night. But, yes, his earlier appearances on AEW, I said, damn, Ospreay can go, you know. And honestly, that you realize for those listening, that's what makes the top guys and makes them valuable is that they can adjust to, you know, what's needed and get the job done. So, yeah. Oh, Ospreay's a hell of an athlete, no doubt about it. And the verbal confrontation between he and the pointer. After the show was over,
I like that, the pointer.
They played that well, you know. If it were real, I would have bought into it. But the minute Kenny said, "Well, now the cameras are off," I said, "Okay, this camera's not." So that kind of told us it worked to begin with. But, Ospreay has developed into a talent. I've seen more than one side. So, yes, I'm not against Will Ospreay as such, but I wasn't overly impressed with that main event, and I thought it ran away too long. Anyway.
Well, while we're still on, since we talked about the main event, let's just talk about anything and everything else on Dynamite. Can I just issue a public service announcement real quick?
You may.
Thank you. I love watching Dax Harwood in singles matches. I love watching Jay Lethal in singles matches. I loved watching their match this past week. Can we stop beating Dax Harwood in every single singles match, please? Look, it's a neon sign, and it's some of the worst of Vince McMahon, frankly, that anytime a tag team guy is in a singles match that he gets beat. I'm pretty sure of all the singles matches Dax has had on TV, and he's had more about a handful now at this point over the last 6 months, the only time he won is when he beat his partner in the tournament. So, you know, stop hanging out the sign that the tag team can't hang with anybody else. And we already know this guy can wrestle. Can we get him some wins, please, if you're going to do this?
Yeah, I agree. You are talking about one half of, for my money, I'm saying this on the Observer site, for my money, this is the best damn tag team in the business today, period, end of story. And yes, they are both talented enough and capable of winning a singles match. And I agree with you. You're not doing them any. Well, the back and tags are getting their, they got all those belts. That doesn't matter. You are beating somebody who should not be losing every singles match he's in. And you point out, you make a hell of a point there, Vic. You really do.
Well, yeah, and I need people to understand, I'm not complaining about Jay Lethal winning. I like Jay Lethal. I think he should get more wins on television. I just think this was a good match to make in terms of quality, but the wrong match to make because you just keep beating Dax. And every time I see him in a singles match, I know what's going to happen. It's going to be a good match, and he's going to lose.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
So was there anything else that jumped out at you on the show before we talk about some more speculation and rumors happening in this company?
No. Nothing else I can think of. I was so shell-shocked with Moxley and Punk, I was numb the rest of the night.
Tell me about that opening segment with Jericho, Daniel Garcia, and Brian Danielson. A lot of folks thought it was the best they've ever heard Daniel Garcia speak, and we set up a match for the pay-per-view between Jericho and Danielson.
It most definitely was. I was impressed with Garcia. I'd be more impressed if he had some calves.
But we'll let that go.
I'm sorry. Yes, I've said I would put kick pads on him, and I don't even like kick pads. I put thick ones on him because it just, you know, it's an aesthetics for me, but it is what it is. Yes, I thought he was, you know, yeah, he hung in there with the promo and the kids, you know, and when he gets a chance to like to work with Dragon, or if they are going to recruit him for Blackstone, that's going to be the best thing that's happened to him. And believe me, I believe in the guy who trained him. Blade trained him, and Pepper, Jesse, or whatever the hell you want to call Blade, is a hell of a talent in his own right. So yes, the kid is on the right track, and it was a good segment. It was a good segment, and I'll be curious to watch the Jericho Dragon match.
We are going to be talking about what has been said or speculated regarding Thunder Rosa and AEW Women's Championship in a minute, as well as the talent meeting that took place before Dynamite this week. Before we get to those subjects, Les, though, you talked about Daniel Garcia, who's obviously not been doing this all that long, particularly on national television, and he took to the microphone pretty well this week. And so, you know, those are one of the things, the many things that you can learn from the legend Les Thatcher at one of those weekend training camps at a wrestling school somewhere or anywhere across the country, around the world for that matter. Let everybody know where they can get a hold of you.
Hell, we can get on the floor in your living room if you've got carpet down. I'm being funny. Yes, if you'd be interested in booking me for a one-day seminar or a weekend training camp, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. Be more than happy to send you out the information, let you know what the costs are, you know, and what we do on those. Be quite honest, I prefer the weekends simply because the talent gets more comfortable with me after the first day. I see more with working with these guys over two full days, so I, you know, can hone in more on what they need. But overall, I just think it's a much better deal. But anyway, if you're interested one way or the other, or one day or a weekend, drop me a line, lesthatcher28@gmail.com.
All right, so Les, there were some rumors going around with Thunder Rosa in the AEW Women's Championship this week. First of all, in her interview, she initially said relinquishing the title, but by the end of the conversation with Tony Schiavone, she had revealed that she was not going to be able to defend the title at the pay-per-view on Labor Day weekend, and that there would be an interim champion crown. There's going to be a four-way, your favorite kind of match, to determine the interim champion in the meantime. But there were other people out there, once again, speculating on what was going on, because nobody apparently, at least at that point, had heard anything about a particular injury with Rosa. And the theories that were out there were perhaps there's some legit heat with Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. Folks will point out, of course, we were talking about this maybe a month or so ago, maybe a little longer now, about the match that Rosa had with Marina Shafir, where there was allegedly a lack of cooperation, or maybe somebody hit a little too hard in Thunder Rosa. And then, of course, the match with Jamie Hayter at Battle of the Belts. I believe Rosa broke Jamie's nose, and there may be some issues between the three of them, Hayter, maybe for the broken nose, and Baker, which has long since been rumored. Don't have any idea if that's rooted in fact, to be honest with you. Or maybe she was upset because Toni Storm, apparently, according to what we've been hearing, was scheduled to win the title at the pay-per-view. So that was silent for a day, and everybody was speculating. And then the next day, AEW released a statement saying that Thunder Rosa has been working through a disc issue in her back, and it's really just gotten to the point where she needs to have it addressed in some shape, form, or fashion. and just wasn't healthy enough to defend the title on the pay-per-view, hence the interim championship. Your thoughts on this whole situation, sir?
Well, when I say I hope it is due to an injury, and I don't mean that I hope Thunder Rosa is hurt, but opposed to the other, we should call this Conspiracy Theory Friday.
Why not?
Title the show. I hope that was the case, that it's a legitimate injury. It's not a secret suspension. And I damn sure hope it has nothing to do with heat that Baker and Hayter may have with Rosa. Because at some point we're going to talk about the town meeting, which I think is the reason, because so many people, let's face it, if you got Tony Khan has more people backstage per square foot than any other roster or any other big promotion in the country. And if he's got 20 people back there, he's got 20 egos. If he's got 45 or 75, he's got 45 or 75 egos. But I can't say you leave your ego at the door. You know, you protect your brand if you're being pushed, obviously. You're going to have comments. But it's like, I'm mad at Baker. I don't want to work with her anymore. Okay, well, you know, forget that. You keep that stuff, like I said, I think last week, you know, you don't take that stuff in the ring. You settle those things behind the scenes, and it is a business. And if I need to work you to work with somebody, well, you know what? Stop and think. Go back to WWE with Matt Hardy and Lita and Edge. You think there wasn't pressure on those people?
Oh, that was intense.
Of course it was. But guess what? They had matches. None of them got suspended. And if anything came up, they were told, you know, hey, keep it out of the locker room. Keep it out of the ring. Settle it or you can all go home. I'm relatively sure of that, you know. I won't mention names here, but just to give you a short example of something like that, I had on my roster a number of years ago a young lady who had dated one guy pretty steadily. And for whatever reason, they parted company and she started dating another guy on our roster. Not right away and not the next day or anything, but I walked in the dressing room one night and she was cozying up to her new love. And the ex-boyfriend was sitting there, trying to mind his own business, but he couldn't help but see it going on, everything. And I didn't make a big deal out of it then, but I called her new boyfriend off the side, and I said, keep your love fest out of my dressing room. All three of you got to work together, and I don't want to see you two smooching and carrying on like that in front of him. It's not good. And it it's not right, right by him either. So, but yes, I don't want to. And do you probably have more problems with women than you do with guys? Yes, that would be pretty much a standard as well. But yeah, I hope that's not it. I hope that's not it. And I don't know, you know. And it could be, you know, they're talking about Rosa having some problems that she's been working through, and maybe she realizes she can't and she needs a break, either to rehab in some way or just give those body parts a rest, you know, and some rehabilitation. So I don't know, you know. But with this company, the drama behind the scenes is actually coming close to matching the drama in front of the camera, don't you think?
I think it might be exceeding it, particularly this week. And that's saying something.
Yes.
Because I think there was a lot of really intense and interesting drama with Punk and Moxley that everybody is correctly still buzzing about. But that takes us to what happened before the cameras went on this past Wednesday, and that's the talent meeting Tony Khan called with everybody. So I really want your take on this, because I'm wondering if it's me, or did calling a meeting to you feel like an acknowledgement that this train could be starting to get away from Tony's control? I mean, from the booking we've talked about week to week, where you're throwing everything against the wall and really not getting out of your normal audience range. Talents who are here for 3 or 4 weeks in a row and then vanish. Tony reportedly being difficult to track down for anyone who's currently not being used. Eddie Kingston being on double secret probation. And if he hadn't said anything about being suspended the other day himself, we never would have found out about it. Subsequent rumors about other people who may be on quote-unquote secret suspension. And you add to that the fact that Paul Levesque has been churning out quality shows here for the past month or so on both brands. Or was this just a, hey, it's been a while. Things have been going on. We're getting close to a pay-per-view, which is a tentpole event for us. So it's important for me to check in with you guys and see how everything is going. Which of the two do you lean towards?
I think it was a needed. I think it was a needed for the very reason we've been talking about before we even got to the meeting. Dissension, egos, you know, butting heads with different people's egos, and all, you know, guys wanting to fight behind the scenes and stuff. No, this was necessary. And, you know, you and I talked about this when the Roads to the Top little special, which was, I thought, well, you know, was entertaining, well done. But when they showed scenes behind the video, when they showed scenes behind the scene, I thought it was chaotic. I think I mentioned that to you.
You did.
Back then.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought, God, this backstage looks like Grand Central Station. People trying to make their train and you know, checking the board and all. I mean, it just looked too chaotic to me. And if it is really chaotic, then it needs to be better organized. And I think part of, you know, again, you've got so many people, and if everybody on his roster are backstage, I mean, you've got to have some people there that aren't going to be working, because you never know who might get hurt or go down or just get stuck, you know, by missing a flight or getting stuck in an airport someplace. But if you've got 100 people on your roster, you're damn sure not going to use 100 people on a 2-hour show. So probably the smart thing is, you know, to have like your, if you want to call your taxi squad, you know, a couple of your ladies who may need to be, may have to fill in if something comes up, or, and few of your guys, baby faces and heels, but you don't want everybody back there, and everybody can't get your ear. If you're the only booker, excuse me. And, when we talked, you know, about, Tony Schiavone being put on this, and you mentioned, and I concurred, if Jerry Lynn is the head of talent relations, then Jerry Lynn needs to be the guy that I go to as a wrestler and say, hey, I'm not real sure. I couldn't I be used better, do you think? Or, you know, and he needs to be that. And again, as I said last week, it's not because I don't think Tony Schiavone is capable, or it's not that I disrespect Tony. It's just that wrestlers, you know, it's more meaningful coming from an ex-wrestler who is part of talent development or part of talent relations. You know, I can hear it from Bruce Pritchard. I can hear it from Vince. I can hear it from Stephanie, but I'll take more heed to it coming from Triple H. That makes sense.
It does. Yeah. Obviously someone who knows what you've been through and traveled those roads says it to you. It hits a little differently.
Yes. And I don't know, again, I don't know Tony Khan. So I'm not, this is speculation on my part. I understand from all the people I've talked to, he's really a nice guy, although I do hear he's even worse than Vince on headsets if he decides to be. But the point is, he's not a wrestler. He is a fan with a lot of money. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but that's just looking at it straight on. You know, he's the boss. He's the booker. He's the promoter. But he's also, you know, Vince had a background in the business. family background. Jerry Jarrett, family background. Jim Crockett Jr., family background. Tony Khan doesn't have that. And I don't care how much money you got. I've been in enough locker rooms to tell you this. You can be the richest man in the state I'm in right now. And if you're in a wrestling locker room, if you don't understand wrestling, then it's not that I'm not going to, you know, be nice, respectful, and pay attention when you talk to me. But if you come to me with a wrestling suggestion, even though you're paying me in something, I might question it. The same storyline or idea comes to me through the guy who is, say, the booker and an ex-wrestler or head of talent relations and ex-wrestler. I'm probably going to be more serious about how I approach it myself. And I think that's standard business, you know? If I'm a young guy trying to get my legs in disc jockeying, and you've been doing this for 20-some years or 50 years or whatever, I need to be paying attention to you, not some guy that's actually started 3 weeks after I did, right?
Yes, sir. That's a fact.
And that's a fact in business. It's not, you know, I know, it, you know, the background, all this stuff is more open because it's wrestling, but you see it happen in your business, and I've seen it happen in other business, the gym business, for Christ's sake, you know? Hey, the guy that put up the money for the 20,000 square foot gym that we built up in Northern Kentucky back in the late 80s, the World Gym, it was state of the art. Guess who was calling the shots on the site? Me, because of my gym background. The guy that put the money up, and I don't believe ever picked a weight up in his life, but that's not the point. He sent his suggestions and theories, et cetera, through people who he knew that the people working in his gym were going to pay attention to. So, again, I know I'm using a lot of examples and stuff, but the point is Tony Khan needs, you know, yeah, you don't need Kingston suspended, you don't need Sammy suspended, you don't need, Britt's mad at Thunder Rosa, well, we'll have to put her out and Thunder Rosa down for a while. Somebody's mad because Colt's not here and Punk's fault. Well, maybe it's not. All this needs to be resolved. Now, from what I understand, there were a couple other people spoke at the meeting and maybe a little more, and maybe that was taken a little more in context than Tony Khan's. I know Jericho was one. And who else spoke? Do you remember?
I believe the Bucks and Kenny Omega spoke as well.
Ah, the family. Yes. Yes. The people who basically got Tony Khan into this business to begin with. So, and yes, they probably have his ear better than anybody else, you know. So, but that's, again, that comes back to politics. That has nothing to do. But, yeah, I think it was a meeting. It was most definitely needed from what we've heard just in the last few weeks, don't you?
I do. I hope they all walked away feeling like the air had been cleared and everybody's more or less on the same page now, because as entertaining as these kinds of things are to discuss, our hope, and I believe the hope of everyone, not just at this site or just fans of the wrestling business, want both of these companies to succeed and excel. And if there's anything preventing AEW from doing that, we would all, it's all in everyone's best business interest to get that thing out of the way.
You're absolutely right. You know, it's, it is, you know, I keep stressing it's business, and it's certainly unlike any other, but it is still a business and has to be run like one.
Well, you've run plenty of businesses in your day, some not even in the wrestling business. You just talked about the gym business. You had some stuff working on apartments back in the day. You've run promotions. You sold your own T-shirts when nobody else was doing that in the wrestling business. Talk to us about that very first T-shirt and some of those DVDs you've got available.
All right. Well, and talking about the first wrestling T-shirt ever on the market, that came out in 1972. And it was a Briscoe Burster shirt put out by Jack and Jerry and myself. And the artwork was by Jerry the King Lawler. And you can get a copy of that first ever historic T-shirt if you would like. And we would appreciate by going to Pro Wrestling Tees, and you can pick one of those up there. And if you happen to be a Les Thatcher guy, you can also get on a Les Thatcher guy t-shirt. But yeah, that's it. At all that at Pro Wrestling Tees. And talking about DVDs, Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content on both. And they are both two DVD sets, matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski and myself do the voiceover. Joe, most of the play-by-play. And I cover the background stories and the behind-the-scenes things. You can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And Joe tells me we've got enough footage. We may do a volume 3, actually. Also, the Brian Pillman Show's Anthology 20th Anniversary, 4-DVD set, over 15 hours of content, all four of the great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001. Matches, interviews, action footage, auction footage, extras by the numerous, God, I don't know how many, but a whole bunch. And all that is available at PillmanShows.com or the two addresses I mentioned above, Joe-Dombrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com. And I also want to mention, if you go to the PillmanShows.com, you can click on About, and you'll see my name pop up, and there's some background. Joe's starting, and his webmaster starting to build, me onto the site as well, and it's still under construction. So, but check it all out, if you will.
All right, my friend, we're going to turn our attention to WWE, which all of a sudden has been humming along and is the source of peace and harmony in professional wrestling. Who would have thought that? Over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks or so. Before we get into some of the articles that caught my eye this week and a couple of things on Raw, wanted to give you the opportunity to talk here about something you and I discussed off the air over the weekend, and that was how much you are now just deeply in love with Sami Zayn.
Yeah, oh, I am. Yes, I am. I'm going to tell you, if you are going to make me have a comedy figure, I'm sorry, Orange. I'm sorry, Danhausen. I'm sorry, all the rest of you. Sami Zayn's my guy. First of all, he doesn't come across as just a clown. He is into the character. He makes it worth watching. It's not the same all the time. And what really jumped off at me this past Friday night on SmackDown, they announced a 5-way. And I said, oh, no, because, yes, everyone that listens to us knows I'm not into threes and fours and fives and six ways and all that nonsense. But this one, man, as it zoomed along, I got into it, and I thought, damn, this is good. And the whole story was actually to make us believe that Sami Zayn might win this damn thing. And why I was so excited about it is the spot. Sami got, I think, about 4 false finishes in. And the spots were seamless. Nobody was standing bent at the waist waiting for somebody to come grab him because it was all. And obviously, the setup for all Sami's false finishes had to be talked about in the back because it was that intricate. But what really blew me away was the way they went into those false finishes. They were seamless. Everybody was where they needed to be. Like I said, nobody's standing around. And I'll be honest, in watching it in those first 2 false finishes, I thought, damn it, Sami is going to win this thing. And then I realized, you're pulling my leg here. But it was, well, I sent you an email. I said, if you haven't seen All SmackDown, at least watch this match. And it was that good. And yes, if there is a thing for comedian of the year on the Observer voting, damn it, Sami should win it. I don't give a damn about any, he's a combination of a professional wrestler who is funny. And it's organic. It is not like, hey, we're doing this comedy spot. I got my hands in my pockets. Oh, I'm going to kick you in the shins. It's not the same every week, folks. And that's what makes him a professional and what makes him that damn good. And so, yes. Oh, and I want to ask you, because you're the music expert on this show, can Hit Row actually rap, or is that just Now, I wasn't into it, and I like some rap. I do, as you know. You know, I'm a Bruno Mars fan. All Dean's Country Roads had some hip hop or rap or whatever you want to call it, and I thought that was good. But I'm sorry, I listened Friday night, and I thought, you're laughing at me or you're laughing at them, which is
you, because you're just about to rip from the shreds. Well, here's the thing. I will say this. I don't think they're terrible. I've certainly heard a lot better. And I can promise you, over the course of my career, I have heard much, much, much worse from people who thought they were much, much better.
Well, I've seen a lot of much, much better wrestling from people who thought they were. Yeah, I get your point. I get your point. You're running for office and you're turning into a politician.
some of the people who've pitched their CDs and other things over the course of many years, or MP3s, or emailed files, you would be surprised how many people don't realize just how bad they really are.
I'm sure. It's the same with wrestling. It's the same with wrestling, believe me. But yeah, I'm just, you know, and the whole rap thing Friday night just went way too long. Now, the young lady, I think she presents herself better. The threesome is better, I think. But I could, you know, I'm not an expert at rap or hip hop, so I thought I'd throw it to the expert.
Well, you know what?
And you groveled.
I danced around it a little bit. But you know what? Actually, that was an inadvertent but pretty good segue. Speaking of folks who are adept at dancing verbally, there were a lot of folks who had put a whole lot of money in office pools around the country, maybe even one in Stanford behind their backs, about how long Bruce Pritchard and Kevin Dunn would remain gainfully employed in Stanford now that Paul Levesque is running things creatively and in talent relations. Some of that was upset a couple of weeks back when we saw that Kevin Dunn, it was reported, would be keeping his job, at least for the foreseeable future. No worthwhile replacements on the horizon at this particular point in time. And Bruce Pritchard, who has a pretty successful podcast of his own that he's been keeping since he returned to WWE, was talking about some of the changes here. And he said it was exciting times. And, you know, basically he did take time, we should point out, to clarify his role with creative for NXT. Remember, at the time, they had the brand change, or refresh, as they called it. There were reports that it would be purely Vince and Bruce Pritchard working on that show. And Bruce wanted to make clear on his podcast this week, Les, that he was involved with marketing, or that he had never written a single episode of NXT. He was more involved in the marketing and promotion, I guess, co-working with USA Network on those kinds of things, but that from the moment the brand got the refresh, Shawn Michaels has been in charge.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've always gotten along with Bruce, but Bruce is one of the direct conduits, was, or has always been, as far as I know, one of the direct conduits. If you wanted to be sure Vince heard something, tell Bruce. Now, in terms of will that hurt him, with the new regime, I don't know. You know, if he's ever gone to Vince about, hey, Triple H said this, or Shawn Michaels said that, it could hurt him, you know. But I don't really know. I mean, wow, you know, Vince thrived on that, you know, and I know some guys do. I can't speak for Triple H. You're going to have people that you trust, like your second command, your lieutenants, people that, you know, you want feedback from. But that wasn't, Bruce took that over and above. And now I'm trying to be a politician. I don't know. You know, he has value in that company. I just don't think, there were so many people that Vince, I know I had started. Jerry Briscoe called me once and said, he was in a meeting where my name came, somebody thought they'd score points by bringing my name up in a negative. thing, but Jerry said, don't worry about it. I won't tell you who it was, but JR and I've taken care of it. JR wasn't at the meeting, but Jerry went to JR, and JR, you know, smoothed it over. And if there's anything I've disliked about the wrestling business since I've been in it, which entails now over 62 years, is the politics. Hate it. Use me for, if I have a talent, then I'm more than happy to use it if we work out the right arrangements. If I have to kiss your ass and tell you the answer is yes when the answer should be no, then that's, I have problems with that. I do. So, but yeah, Bruce understands the business, you know, but I don't know. I'd be hard pressed to tell you. And I think a lot of it, like I just said, it depends, because he was a direct, everyone in the business that was or in that company that had been in that company a length of time knew that. So, you know, it's hard to say if that hurts him or if he, I mean, he has value there, you know? So,
well, he was,
I guess the clock is ticking.
Yeah, I presume he was pretty diplomatic himself. Since we're on the subject regarding his
yes.
immediate future or anything like that. But, you know, there's only, I think he did at the end say it well, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, you can worry
right.
about it. You can choose to live and keep moving forward. And I choose to keep moving forward, which is good advice for all of us, frankly.
Right.
Another article caught my eye with Roman Reigns, who appeared recently on the Sports Illustrated Media podcast, where he talked about Paul Levesque being tossed into this situation on, under most really interesting circumstances and surprise, if not short notice, and talked about how, you know, if you look at the grand scheme of things and what he's just had to step into, when you think about 40 plus years of Vince McMahon's legacy in creating this, what's become of the territory he bought from his father, and thinking about, you know, my girlfriend and I, Cece, we often talk about this with big people in the music business or just big jobs in general. Somebody who's been a titan of industry, you never want to be the next person. You want to be the person after that person, because you're always compared to that one if you follow him immediately. And there's usually a bumpier road for that person than there is for the person who follows him or her. But Paul Levesque's been tossed into the situation, like it or not, and Roman Reigns so far has been very impressed. He talked about that on the podcast, and especially when you consider the fact that he is immediately following Vince McMahon, he's even more impressed. He also did say what we talked about a few weeks ago when asked whether or not Vince might be giving Triple H a thought or two about what he sees on television. And Roman said, well, of course, listen, if I was sitting next to my dad right now, he'd be pitching me something. So I can't imagine that Vince isn't. But I look at that and I mention that only because I want to talk to you about Triple H here this week. We saw the return of Johnny Gargano on Raw, and obviously I want your thoughts on that. But we also know that Kurt Angle is returning to Raw next week. And there was a little point counterpoint going on the internets. One, you know, the pro side of it was that Paul Levesque is making the show more exciting over the last month or so. He's given us more professional wrestling. 3 hours is tough no matter what, but it's a lot less of a chore to sit through on Mondays. And more people are watching. He's gotten off to a great start. The counterpoint is that some folks are saying all he's really done to this point is unveil surprises week after week. He's just brought one person after another back, so he's already overdoing the surprises. And aside from that, really hasn't done all that much so far. Your thoughts?
Well, I think he has I see what they're saying. But I think he's bringing back the people he thinks are beneficial to the company. And, and people he's comfortable working with. And let's face it, Gargano is certainly one of those. And when I saw Johnny come out, we're fellow Buckeyes, so we bonded the first time we met. You know, Johnny was the guy who I put over in our year-long tournament in Los Angeles back 2012 and 2013. And that year-long tournament, it was he and Adam Cole that were the finalists. And you talk about changing finishes on the fly, Nigel and I thought we'd get Cole over until Nigel called me and he said, you know, a lot of people have been saying we know Cole's going to win. I said, well, then let's surprise him. So we decided to put John over. Anyway, yeah, he's a good kid, good worker. And I thought his, you know, his speech about, you know, coming, what I can do, I need to do it here. And the whole thing I thought was good. I thought it was good. I think what Roman's saying about Triple H being the babyface, I think for a lot of people, again, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, wrestlers are more comfortable dealing with wrestling people than they are management, you know, people with coats and ties. So I think a lot of guys will find that more comfortable, you know, dealing with Paul. But as a baby, yeah. And yes, he's brought back some people. He's throwing some, you know, some surprises out. But when we talk about that, who started this AEW company 2 years ago?
Oh, well.
Did he do to get your attention?
Oh, he brought in a whole bunch of new faces.
And threw some surprises out, right?
Absolutely.
Well, it was okay for him to do that, but it's not okay for Paul.
Very fair point.
You know, well, I mean, that's, God, that's like our country is at that point, isn't it? If I don't agree with you, I must be an asshole. yeah, I mean, and you may not see it. I think the show flows better. When I see a five way that I'm into, something's different, by God. Something is different. The 3 hours is tough. I don't give a damn who's booking it or who's the boss or who's on the show. But it's more palatable now, I think. And I'll be honest with you, there's sometimes that I'll, you know, I record it anyway, and sometimes I'll save the last 45 minutes or so and catch it the next day. But I think it's going to be more about wrestling. And I think what we're seeing new people or people being brought back and surprises simply because anything that's done post Vince is going to be a surprise to a certain degree. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, well, and yes, obviously. And everyone's going to overanalyze everything you're doing, especially right out the gate following Vince McMahon and the long suffering, I think some would say, fans who have been looking for this show to change in any shape, form, or fashion, which is now funny when you say that, talking about the point counterpoint. People have been begging for things to be shaken up. He's shaken things up for 4 weeks, and now they're saying all he's done is shake it up.
So, yeah. You know what I was just thinking about? I don't think I've ever told this story here. I'm not going to tell the whole story now, but I don't remember what year it was. I was still living here, though. I got a call from Tampa, and they wanted to fly me in to sit in with Gordon on the TV. So, I'm going to condense it here, the whole thing, because we're not on that today. But anyway, so I get down there, and we sit in, and we do the show. I mean, Gordon and I had worked together before, so it wasn't a big deal. So after this is over and everyone else gone home, we end up in Eddie Graham's office with Dusty and Jerry Briscoe and Kevin Sullivan and Mike Graham. And they tell me that, I don't know what had happened, but that they, Gordon was going to be fired. And they offered me that spot. Now you talk about not following the legend.
Yeah, right? No, figure out what to say to get out of that one.
But the deal was they were going to do it. Well, you know, he and I worked together in Atlanta, and I got sent, you know, when Barnett came in, he was the only one announcer. So I went back to Charlotte. So turnabout's fair play. No, that wasn't the way I looked at it. But I figured, okay, if you're going to get rid of him. And I tell you, they went all out. Mike Graham owned a couple condos, and he told me, he said, Les, you can live in one of my condos. I mean, they were good about it. And so we roughed in an idea, and I flew back to Knoxville with the idea that we were going to work something out. Now, here's the funny part of the story, and then we'll move on. And Jerry Briscoe will confirm this because that's how I know this has happened. So they've decided, you know, they've got Les Thatcher is going to come on board. He's going to live at Mike's condo. We've decided on this and that and this and that. And okay. And then Eddie says, who's going to tell Gordon? And Dusty said, well, you're the boss. You're going to tell Gordon. And Eddie said, well, you should tell Gordon. Guess what? Nobody told Gordon. I stayed in Knoxville.
Nobody could decide who was going to do the job. And so they said,
no.
Since nobody wanted to tell Gordon Soley was fired, he kept
nobody, yeah, right. You tell Soley you're done here. Right? So I don't know. You know what? I don't know if Gordon ever heard that or knew, you know, heard anything about that ever in his life. I don't know.
Goodness,
but yeah, that's a true story. That is a true story.
And a perfect way to bring this particular edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly to a close. I wish you all a very happy and healthy weekend. It is another hot one in the Northeast. Hydrate accordingly. For the legend Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend some of it here with us. And we will talk to you again next week.